to say Babylon by Anna, Faith, Carrie, Jessica, and Shema. Today we will explore the protective factors, risk factors, outcomes of Sophia Sinclair, a brilliant poet and writer who, despite her rough upbringing, was able to really flourish into the woman that she is today. But how was she able to overcome those odds? Where did she find the strength? We're going to find out together. So let's first look at Sophia's childhood. All right, so briefly going into her early childhood, she grew up really poor, right? The first house she lived in was a really small fishing village that didn't even have running water or electric, right? Mm-hmm. And so that sort of theme of really deeper poverty sort of follows Sophia throughout her life with her family. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how that really puts strain on her family. So she grew up in a really strict Rastafari household, and that was sort of good and bad. Well, mostly bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the pros is that what?
I was going to say that her father's Rastafari views really put a strain on her life and her siblings' lives.
Oh, for sure. Definitely, right? It was, like, super controlling. Mm-hmm. I know I should have had these.
That's better. Okay.
Sophia grew up in a really strict Rastafari household, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were really secluded from the world, and that, I think, was one of the big problems about the Rastafari strictness of the household. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Here's a quote from page 40, and I think it really sort of speaks to this isolation that this Rastafari upbringing had. The splintering would eventually become the painful undoing of my family a generation later, because it encouraged most Rastafari to individualize their liberty at home with impunity. There, in the privacy of their own households, each Rasta brethren could be a living godhead, the king of his own secluded temple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're seeing already a really kind of unhealthy balance with this.
Yeah, another thing I want to add is part of the Rastafari was talk of Babylon, which is like the government technology.
The Western world, basically.
Yeah, like the white world.
And because that was such a big thing for Safiya's dad, I have a quote from page 50 that says, "His paranoia that I would be invaded by Babylon would dominate my childhood for years to come," which kind of gives a glimpse of the negative childhood that's going to unfold in the rest of the story.
Yeah, it foreshadows her life throughout the book. Like, the Rastafari life had such a grip on her and her siblings that, like, she really didn't know anything else except for it.
Yeah. And I also think it's important to remember, I'm just, like, looking at my notes, and there's a quote where it says that although the Rastafari movement was non-violent, they were the nation's black sheep, feared and despised by a Christian society still under the British rule and forced to live on the fringes as pariahs. So I think that it's important to, like, note that they were nonviolent, but I also think, like, because they were so, like, alienated from everybody else, that is kind of how, I guess how, you, like, just, like, the household is, like, shaped, almost.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, for sure, and despite, like, though some of these, like, bad aspects of it, we can say that there was at least one good thing about this Rasta upbringing, right? And that's sort of the pride that she takes in being her and, like, black, right?
Yeah.
And we don't really see that more positive side until she's older, but it's definitely still there, right? So he really, her father in this setting, also gave her a really good foundation of herself and her history, right? Because we know history is super unfair.
Definitely.
In terms of, like, being whitewashed and all that. And I think it was super important to acknowledge that this gave her that unwhitewashed history of herself and her culture.
Definitely. Like, she grew up in a developing, you know, world where everything was being influenced by something. So, like, her Rastafari life, it definitely, like, gave her another perspective of her world that she was growing up in, you know?
Mm-hmm. For a really long time, she raised her dad with this kind of... I have a quote from page 91 that says, "He was a superstar to me, and I wore this pride-like armor, the magnificence of having an extraordinary father becoming my own magnificence."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's sort of, at least in these early childhoods, it's sort of knitting the family together, letting them find strength among themselves, which is a good thing, right? We're kind of seeing that, right? But there are some bad things. We know even at those early ages, she is dealing with, like, pretty consistent sexism in her life already, right? With the way her father talks about women. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a whole chapter literally called Unclean Women.
Which is in a whole other chapter itself. That chapter was really crazy to read, I think.
Yeah. Another thing that Sophia would experience pretty early in life and continuing is drug use. So, coming from her mom. And another good thing about Rasta is that it really helped them to live off the land, right? So they're very self-sufficient. Like, these kids grew up learning how to take care of themselves from a young age. And I think that really will help them later on in life when we're looking at individual protective factors, especially for Sophia. So in these early childhood years, we're also seeing emerging protective factors. We have our Auntie Audrey, which we will see her really stand up to dad at moments and see that as a theme throughout the book. Sophia's own intelligence and curiosity and just willfulness, as well as her mother, which will be in conflict at some points, but, you know, I think we can set our sights on her to be a big protective factor, along with Grandma Pauline, which is Sophia's grandmother on her father's side. And then just, like, that sibling support, which, you know, if we all have siblings, I think we all know just how important that is for being able to, like, cope in dysfunction in the family, right?
Yeah. Her siblings are really, I feel like, to me, what I read was that her siblings are a big part of her life and her support system.
With all the isolation, I mean, it becomes hard not to lean on them and base on that connection a lot about how at the end of the day it was the Sinclair family and no one else, and that's all they needed.
Yeah,
especially for this early childhood, like, that is how the family is seen. The family itself is sort of a little protective cocoon for her. All right, so overall, Sophia had a pretty happy early childhood, sort of protected by her perception of things, right? She's kind of slow to really start seeing the sexism, which she really doesn't see until later. But happy despite the poverty and some hostilities in the household that she's facing even at these early ages. Her protectors, I feel like, at least, really outweigh the risks right now. But as she gets older, she will go on to experience physical abuse, emotional abuse, mental illness within the family, sexual assault, violence in the family, along with substance abuse. So we'll see if these protective factors for Sophia are able to withstand the onslaught of risk factors coming Sophia's way. We'll find out in part 2, the teen years.